You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Stephen Harper has now been Prime Minister of Canada for nearly 5 years. During this time, he has keenly interested himself in remaking the criminal justice system. In fact, almost a third of his legislative agenda has concerned itself with crime. There's been the Truth in Sentencing Act, mandatory minimum sentencing, harsher sentencing and treatment for young offenders, and more prisons. Paula Millay is a retired criminal lawyer, and she is the author of a recent report for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Her report is called The Fear Factor, The Stephen Harper Tough on Crime Agenda, and she joins me by phone this morning from Ontario. Hello, Paula.
Hello, Jane.
Now, is there a need for Canada to get tough on crime?
Not in the way that that the Prime Minister has in mind, no. Of the 30% legislation you've talked about, virtually all of it tends to do nothing more than extend sentences, sentence lengths, or to make prison conditions harsher. And so neither of those is likely to either prevent crime or prevent reoffending by people who have done time. So that kind of tough on crime we know doesn't work. If it did, the United States would have a fraction of the crime that it has today.
Now, you've called this not so much tough on crime as tough on taxpayers. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that I know that the public tends to feel that tough on crime is a good plan until they receive more information about what the consequences of long sentencing can be. But I think the public would also take a moment to reconsider their position if they knew what it was likely to cost them. So, for example, the Parliamentary Budget Officer has looked into simply one of the 24 pieces of legislation that are now in the works and has decided, after calculating on two different models, that one piece of legislation will cost the taxpayer $5.1 billion over 5 years, and that would more than double the cost of corrections in Canada. That is flatly a waste of our money, and it will result in many more prisons, much more incarceration, and much more likelihood of a higher crime rate rather than a lower crime rate.
Why do you say it would increase the probability of a higher crime rate?
We know that longer sentencing certainly doesn't reduce the likelihood of reoffending. We also know that sentencing and longer sentencing does not provide a deterrent to other possible offenders. So there are many other ways in which those billions of dollars could be spent that would in fact have the effect of preventing crime and reducing reoffending.
And this cost that you're talking about of the $5 billion, I believe you said, over 5 years. That's just one piece of a whole package of legislation. So, in fact, the cost would be much, much greater overall.
Yes, it would.
I think that everybody's all concerned about the cost of the new fighter jets, but I really think that the costs of this crime legislation will make that pale by comparison. The one piece that I've discussed is not even one of the larger pieces. One of the larger pieces would be the mandatory minimum sentences for drugs, for drug use. For growing marijuana, for example, or for trafficking, that sort of thing, hundreds and hundreds of more people will be going into prison if this legislation passes, and it's very close to passing. So we need to be concerned because we're talking many more prisons, much more staff, far more expense. Each maximum security cell, for example, to operate and maintain costs almost $250,000. That's a fabulous amount of money to warehouse people who will just come out and be very bitter and very angry and very unlikely to fit back into their communities easily.
Now, I guess we have a good example in the United States of, as you mentioned, of some of this legislation. What has it looked like in the States with mandatory minimum sentencing? What's the experience been?
Yeah, that's right. We have the research on these now so that we know mandatory minimums do not provide a deterrent. We know how expensive they will be as well. California, for example, has, and a number of other states have begun to dismantle their mandatory minimum regimes because, A, it's about to bankrupt their treasuries, and B, it's not affecting the crime rate in any positive way whatsoever. They still have a crime rate that's about seven times as high as every other Western country.
So we've talked, or you've talked quite a bit about the financial cost. Let's turn for a moment to look at the social cost of this kind of an agenda. What will happen if, for example, you send more kids to jail?
Well, the worst thing you can do is send children to jail. We know that because with a recent change in young offender legislation, we've been able to reduce the number of young offenders incarcerated by 43%. So we have almost half as many kids in custody today as we did about 7 years ago, and yet the crime rate has for young offenders has also been falling. So we know we don't need to be incarcerating kids at that rate. We also know that when they do go into custody, that they learn to be really good criminals and come out all ready to act on that. They make bad friends. They join gangs. It's an extremely counterproductive thing to do with children. We also know if we take the money used on the prisons and put it into the social programs necessary to keep kids from ever going there, that it's a far more sensible use of our money and it costs less in the long run.
Now, it appears that a lot of the legislative changes that are being introduced take discretion away from the judges and away from the judicial system, reducing justice to a simple formula: you do the crime, you do the time. What's wrong with that kind of approach?
There's a lot wrong with it. It seems to be another piece of the agenda which is following the American example of setting down guidelines or minimums and requiring judges to do what the politicians of the day want them to do. Our judiciary works very well indeed. These guys know how to sentence heavily when they need to, and they know how to tailor a sentence to a particular individual and particular facts. That's the way the whole system is set up to run, and it runs very well. The moment that you take the discretion away from judges, strange things begin to happen within the system. For example, an average victim may decide simply not to lay a charge if the victim knows that the result will be at least 12 months in jail, for example. If they feel that that's too much for what's been done to them, police may decide not to lay charges in cases where it's too onerous a result. Juries are known to fail to convict where they don't like what the result will be. So what happens is you take the discretion away from the people who should have it, the judges, and you're essentially handing it over to people who aren't trained for the job and, you know, shouldn't be, they shouldn't have that burden placed upon them. It's for the judges to do. This is part of a agenda that reflects the contempt that this government appears to have for the Canadian judiciary, and it has been expressed many times, even with respect to the Supreme Court of Canada. They feel that the judges are being too activist. Well, in fact, what the judges are doing are properly interpreting the law, which is their job.
Now, we've been talking quite a bit about what the Harper government is doing. Let's turn for a moment to look at why they're doing this. How would you answer that question?
This has been the biggest question for me in doing this research. There's a contempt for the system and the judiciary, it seems. There also appears, in a more general sense, in the rest of their legislative agenda as well, a contempt for evidence-based policy, a bias against research, a bias against statistics. We've seen that with the cancellation of the mandatory long-form census, which is largely there to provide us with the information we need to be able to tailor our social programs to what's required by the public and so forth. Where this is coming from is a mystery, because these are not stupid people. They do know the information, and the only explanation that I can come to is an ideological bias that produces a very moralistic, inflexible code, some kind of a standard of morals that they possess that the rest of us, I guess, don't, and that they would like to impose through the criminal justice system. It's a very harsh approach. There's no logic to it. We know from experience, from decades of experience, what works and what doesn't work in this system, and they seem to be wanting to wind the clock back about 50 years to a state where, you know, we really did have a high crime rate and a lot of violence in the system. So I don't understand. Nothing makes sense to me except that there's an ideology there. Whether it's a from a secular perspective or from a religious perspective, that's a mystery to me.
Well, I'm wondering if also it's a pragmatic approach in that it will get them votes.
Well, it certainly will. I mean, and I think that they actually recognize that and are exploiting that. And I also carry a bit of concern on this one with respect to the opposition parties, because for this kind of legislation to go forward, it does require under a minority government the assistance of opposition parties that should know better. And they do know better. I've read their speeches in the House, and they do know what the correct information is and what should be done, where the money should be going, which is into the social programs preventing crime. But they are simply not willing to be thought of as soft on crime. It would be my position that they owe it to the public to provide the education and information necessary to take the right steps and to show some leadership with respect to that.
So then actually reducing crime, actually being tough on crime would mean increasing spending. It's the same thing we've been talking about, I guess, for years and years, increasing spending on social programs, helping people in an earlier stage of their lives, that kind of thing.
It is that kind of thing, but be careful in that by reducing the amount of incarceration, you then have a lot of dollars to work with. So it's actually taking the dollars from that kind of a system and putting it into a system that deals with individuals one at a time as individuals and tailors programs to their difficulties. This is being done in Quebec right now. They have a 50% less young offender crime rate in Quebec because they're doing it. New Brunswick has taken it up, and they swear by it. They think it's a better use of the money. It costs less. The results are far better. And if you consider that a high proportion of the people doing time right now are either have a mental illness or are illiterate or have a substance abuse problem, those are all problems we know how to solve. It's a matter of putting the money there. And this government would appear to want to take money from those kinds of programs and rather put them into building prisons. And I have a lot of difficulty understanding why.
Thank you very much for talking to us this morning. And I'm going to point people towards the report, Paula.
Thanks so much, Jane.
I've been speaking with Paula Millay. She's the author of a new report. It's called The Fear Factor, Stephen Harper's Tough on Crime Agenda. And you can get it at the CCPA website. That's the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. And their website is policyalternatives.org.